Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the audio conference entitled Using Data in the CFSR and Beyond. All lines are in an interactive mode, and we ask that you please refrain from placing your phones on hold. If you need to mute your line and do not have a self-muting feature on your phone, at the conclusion of my opening remarks, you may press star then six on your touch-tone telephone. That works like a toggle, star six to mute yourself, star six to take yourself off mute if you wish to speak. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star, then zero. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Peter Watson. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Patty. And welcome, everyone, to our teleconference this week. As Patty said, the title is Using Data in the CFSR and Beyond. We are going to try to keep this in full interactive mode during the entire call. We've had a little bit of trouble in recent calls, and we have a lot of people with some background noise. And if that happens and there's just too much noise, we might end up muting everyone's lines, at least while people are speaking, and then opening them up again during questions. But I'll give a quick overview, and then we want to jump right into this because Christine Borsheim from Minnesota only has a half an hour or so to speak with us. So we are going to start with her talking about what the work is in Minnesota around using data and information related to the CFSR process. But quickly, our goal in having the teleconference today, we're following up on to some extent on a teleconference we had last week that focused on the CFSR data indicators and composites. Today we're going to broaden that a little bit and talk about using data in general in the CFSR, as well as beyond the CFSR in terms of our child welfare systems. And we're hoping our two speakers today from states, Christine Borsheim from Minnesota and Mary Ellen Biarzi from New Mexico, will be able to share with us the way that they've used data and information in preparing for the CFSRs, how they're going to use data during their program improvement plan development and implementation, and probably just in general in their systems to look at outcomes and try and improve outcomes. So I'm really going to leave it at that. We really want this to be interactive, and after each person speaks, we'll open it up for questions and try to get a dialogue going with everyone who's on the line. We're not going to do introductions because we had, I think, 110 people registered for this teleconference. I'm not sure how many will actually join us, but there's a number of folks out there, and I think we'd rather just get to the content. So when you ask questions, please let us know who you are and where you're from, just so we can, again, get that conversation going. Linda, is there anything else I should add in before we start?
I think you've covered it, Peter.
Okay. And I should say that this teleconference is co-sponsored with Linda Arnold and her resource center, the National Resource Center for Child Welfare Data and Technology. So let's just get right into it with Christine, because she has a limited amount of time, and then we'll hopefully have a good call today. So thanks. Christine.
Okay. Thanks, Peter. What I'm going to start off with here today is talking a little bit about how we used our data to support site selection for our CFSR. And I talked about this very briefly in another conference call a few weeks ago, which is why Linda asked me to share it with this group here today. And then if we have a little more time, I can talk a little bit more about how we're using data in our approach to our statewide assessment. We are currently completing our work on our statewide assessment. Our draft is due by the end of this month. We have one meeting remaining with our statewide assessment team, so we're kind of right in the middle of that whole process. Our CFSR state coordinator, I'll basically discuss my role too. I am not the state coordinator for our CFSR. I work in our research and planning, and so I'm kind of partnering with the quality assurance unit in carrying out the data analysis and summary of our performance according to the data for the statewide assessment. So most of the data pieces are being kind of presented, pulled together by this unit. So from the very beginning, our statewide coordinator was very interested in identifying the two review sites as early as possible so that we could start preparation and support of those sites. Because site selection is a result of a statewide assessment, according to the Children's Bureau's schedule, this decision usually isn't made until after the draft of the statewide assessment is submitted. And for us, that would be after the end of June.
Hello, you have been invited to join a conference call. Please press 1 to join.
I apologize. I'll check into that.
Okay. But
I'm sorry, but your entry is not valid. Please press 1 to be joined to the audio conference.
Using our data, we were able to support our recommendations for case review sites.
I'm sorry, but your entry is not valid. Please hang up and try connecting to...
One moment, I'll correct that.
Not your fault, Christine.
Well, am I supposed to be pressing something? Okay. Anyway, we had, using our data, we could support our recommendations for the case review sites, and we had our sites approved by our third planning call. So that gave us actually... we feel kind of a head start of anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks earlier than we'd expected we would have to work with the other counties selected as these sites. So the steps that we went through to accomplish this were that, first of all, when we returned from our regional training last summer that was kind of launching the second round of the CSRs, one of the first things we did when we came back to Minnesota was run a report that basically provide us with a case sample size. If you all know about the four categories of placement cases that are being reviewed this time, we had an interest in knowing of how many of our counties could even support that case sample size in a review. So using the definitions of those categories and running a report of all of our 87 counties, we basically determined that around 50 of our counties would not even be able to support a case sample size. So that certainly, reduced the list right there to about 37 counties that we would even consider. We had no interest in recommending reviews in kind of a group of counties or rolled up counties. In our first and second planning calls with the Children's Bureau, they encouraged us to submit very early drafts of our statewide assessment. And so we did that. Prior to our first statewide assessment team meeting, with a document still in early development stages, we sent it to them, and it included just a little bit of data about how we did in our first child and family service review, what our own quality assurance findings were, real minimal data, but it gave them an idea of how we were producing and kind of proceeding with our statewide assessment. And along with that draft, we made our recommendations for the two sites that we wanted to be considered for our review. One of the things we sent, or what we sent to back up that recommendation, was a spreadsheet that we developed based on the four data composites that showed our state performance, but also county level performance for those 37 counties that could support a case sample size. We actually developed our own version of a scaled score. Because if you're familiar with how the composite scores are developed, you need a sample size of like 500 to be able to do that score. So we actually applied our own score. And I can't tell you how we did that because I'm not the mathematician on our group, but it helped us then to develop a rank order of how our counties performed on each of those composites and each of the measures. So for each measure, for each composite, we have a spreadsheet that shows performance on each measure, the total of measures met, and we highlight any performance that's above or below state performance, above or below the national median, or above or below the 75 or 25th percentile, depending on whatever the performance target is. And we have the number and percent of counties that met the measure overall. So we were able to represent to the Children's Bureau how our recommended counties compared to state performance. We responded to a couple of other questions on their part, and then also provided information to them about the Minnesota Child and Family Service Review, our QA findings, so that we could represent those counties also very closely reflected statewide performance in our QA reviews. So anyway, we had our sites approved by our third planning call. We are currently working with those sites to prepare for the on-site review. We've actually already received our random sample list for the placement cases. So, I don't know if you want to take any questions on that part. part of what we've done.
Yeah, this is Chad from Wyoming. When is your actual on-site?
The end of September.
End of September. Okay, you've already got your sample?
Yeah.
Well,
they sent a sample out shortly after they agreed to the two other review sites.
Okay, and you really think that getting all that data together really expedited that process of getting your review sites and getting the sample?
Right. In our early calls with the Children's Bureau, what I think they made very clear was that they were interested in whatever sites we selected or were selected that had performance that was reflective of the state performance. What we have found, as we've done some further analysis, is that most of our performance on the statewide, on the performance measures and the composites are pretty statewide. You know, we're not seeing pockets of different kinds of performance or breakouts by like urban, rural, or other kinds of things. But we could still demonstrate that in the data. And I do think that that helps support that decision, particularly since it was prior to our statewide assessment being completed.
And Christine, this is Peter. You said you also used the Minnesota CFSR information. So did you break that down, what, at the item level or outcome level, just to let the Children's Bureau know how those counties' performance was? And did you do a rank order of those across all of the counties, or just present it for the two that you chose besides Hennepin?
We just presented it for the two that we chose, and we did it by item. Their feedback to us was very specific to what about well-being, because that's an area in our very early draft of the statewide assessment, you know, they could see where it was an area where we don't have, you know, really strong performance. And so we could provide that performance data from those three counties as well. Do you want me to talk just briefly, Peter, about how we're using data in the rest of our statewide assessment process?
Yeah, that would be great. I just want to make sure, does anyone else have any questions about what Christine described around choosing those sites? Because I know there have been questions about that in other states that I've been working with, and Christine, I haven't heard you talk about this approach. It sounds pretty slick to me. So,
yeah, and, you know, we would be willing to kind of share the layout that we used and how we've kind of represented that composite and performance data. It's a lot, but we could certainly send it out.
Happy campaign from Florida. I would be interested to know exactly what types of data you all were able to use on the well-being side, because you know, we've just started the process of working on our statewide assessment, but it seems like we have a lot less data on the well-being portion than the other two.
Primarily what we had for the well-being data were findings from our own state quality assurance reviews. However, on items around worker visits with children and worker visits with parents and, to a lesser extent, meeting physical health needs, we had also developed some performance reports through our research unit to kind of monitor performance on those. So we could provide that as well. Those performance reports actually go out to counties and aren't, you know, they aren't generated out of our quality assurance reviews.
Christine, this is Liz Cromery from Texas. My understanding is, as we prepare for this, that when the feds send us the data, that they will send us the state profile, but also county level information. And did you just do the county level piece because you could do it much earlier than getting that information, or how fast did you get that county specific information?
We got the county specific information with the data profile. So actually, most of the work we did in terms of kind of representing it back to the Children's Bureau, because when you see it come out, it's not real usable. I mean, it's just like, it's nothing that you could actually present anywhere. So a lot of what we did with it was put it in a format that actually could tell a little bit of a story about how these counties were actually performing, like I said, kind of grouping the data together by composites, each of the related measures. Like I said, one of the things we did then was kind of assign this new score so that, again, across our counties, they could tell what their scores were within I think we used a 1 to 100 scale instead of their 50 to 150 scale.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
So if we are, this is Susan Mee from Tennessee. If we are interested in getting more information, are you guys going to set that up, Peter? Or?
Yeah, I think that would probably be easier. We could, Christine, why don't we talk either, I mean, if you can send it to me, if it's not massive, just go ahead and send it, and then
sure.
We could do two things. Linda, have you put this on the CFSR CFSP coordinator extranet site yet?
No.
Because we could post it there. I think all states have some folks who are part of that network, but then we could also, once we have it, send a general email out to everyone who signed up for this and let them know it's available. So those of you who aren't part of that could just get in touch and we could get it to you.
Yes, and Peter, I'm also thinking that we might be able to work with Christine and then work with the Children's Bureau to put some, maybe get some general information out there, for example, on our website,
yep.
You know, to help states that want to do this, because I know many states are wanting to make this decision earlier, so we can do some follow-up, too, with the Children's Bureau.
Okay. Good.
Great. It may take a little time. I'll probably want to clean out the county names
okay.
from the data. I don't know that they'd want all that out there.
Sure.
Come on, Christine. None of us will tell.
Well, I know. You know, you know, we didn't meet five of the measures, so some of it is not the best news.
And, Christine, one of the things that I'm thinking is that we can work with you on how you did the process and develop some ways that then we can generalize it.
Sure, sure. I said we were pretty, surprised. We were pleased with the fact that we kind of got that approval early on. And it just gives us extra time to work with counties. You know, there's a lot of work to get ready for just hosting this logistically. So we're able to start bringing them in already and lining up calls with the Children's Bureau so we can do some planning. It just all helps.
Anybody else have any questions on this piece before Christine talks generally about the statewide assessment?
This is Susan from Tennessee again. I just have one sort of non-data specific question. In terms of site selection, how much did you look at or factor in specific initiatives that you might have going on in pilot sites? And because, you know, we've got several things that are going to, you know, we think become the norm but are still somewhat in co-ed at this point. And so we'd like to utilize those, but just don't know if you had that sort of discussion with ACF around site selection.
Right. We did. When we sent in our first recommendation along with this data sheet, we included information that represented, we considered location, the population diversity, that their performance was representative of statewide performance, that they could support the review sample, and they were counties that we believed had innovative approaches to child welfare. And so it was really all rolled in together. I think that the data was one of the pieces that probably helped cement it somewhat, because from this impression we kept getting from the Children's Bureau, if we would have had a very high, let's say a high-performing county, I don't know they would have necessarily been approved as a site if that performance didn't reflect a kind of a statewide picture. But we're lucky we had both in some counties. So, for instance, one of the counties we have has a very active court improvement project, concurrent permanency planning, a citizen review panel, so a number of things that are going on in that county that we hope contribute to strong performance.
Hey, Christine, for those of us who know Minnesota, what are the two counties? Are you allowed to say yet?
Washington County. Mm-hmm. Which is a suburban county. It's in Minnesota. We have kind of a seven-county metro area around Minneapolis-St. Paul, so it's one of those suburban counties. And the other county is Carleton, which is actually just south of Duluth. And the recommendation for Carleton County was because it has a close working relationship with the Bois de Fort or Fond du Lac tribe. So it was also a representative tribal population.
Great, thanks.
And kind of a medium-sized county.
I know you have about five more minutes. Anything else generally about the statewide assessment you wanted to share with folks, just in terms of the, you know, the use of data and information more generally in that process?
Sure. I think in just a more general sense, the same spreadsheet that I just talked about that we used for the site selection, we've also used in our statewide assessment document, more for the purposes of demonstrating, again, you know, are we looking at any differences in performances across counties, rural, urban, tribal or non-tribal counties. And so for the most part, we've been able to say things like, you know, this performance measure was met in, you know, 60% of the counties or 70% of the counties, which helps give a little picture of what our statewide picture looks like. We've tried to approach the entire development of the statewide assessment is really as if we're using it as our foundation for our program improvement plan. And so if we can start representing right away which counties kind of have a different type of performance, it helps us kind of target what our program improvement efforts, you know, might be. You know, what are those populations? What are those areas? So that's kind of how we're approaching that piece. We have been using the data profile, though, as just a piece of the data we've been using. Certainly, you're very familiar with the quality assurance reviews, and we're using those findings to report performance. We collect and report out on a kind of a large amount of just child welfare data, and particularly kind of pulling together, I think, the years in between the program improvement plan and the second round of CFSR, because we had like about a 3-year gap in time. The child welfare data that we've kept track of is really kind of helping kind of bridge that span of time. So for instance, we can show the 6-year trends on, you know, types of maltreatment or the shifts we've had in adoption or TPRs and things like that. So that's been a big piece of our data. I mentioned earlier that we had developed and issue a number of performance reports. In addition to worker visits, we've also developed reports around physical health exams and timely assessments, and we're using those types of reports in our statewide assessment. We've also had other kind of study projects going on here, particularly most recently, like we've been around our kids in long-term foster care, and so we're using results of that, those study groups in our statewide assessment. Probably our next step, and I don't think we'll have this ready by the time we actually submit our statewide assessment, but kind of an ongoing work for each of those measures and each of the composites, we're hoping to produce kind of a, I don't know if you call it like a child profile across a number of variables, again, to just kind of help us understand a little bit more about, you know, who the kids are that are represented in each of these measures. So we're doing some work around breaking out measures by age, gender, race, ethnicity, disability, the reasons for entering foster care, reasons for discharge from foster care, again, across kind of a wide range of variables. And we just think it will help us target our program improvement interventions a little more effectively.
And Christine, just to clarify that, when you say measures, do you mean those specific measures that are within the composites or even more specific ones than that?
No, I'm referring more to those, what is it, 15 measures, I think, within the composite.
Okay, good, yep.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And that's probably about it. I think, like I said, we have our last statewide assessment team, advisory team meeting coming up. I think one of our challenges that we have out there yet is that we haven't really figured out how or when to roll out all this composite measure stuff to our counties. Because from the time we've received it, we've been pretty well tied up in this statewide assessment process. We haven't really had the opportunity to get this message out or do any education around it. And in Minnesota, over the last several years, we've kind of embedded these performance measures across a number of activities. And so it's going to take a little work to kind of either replace with new measures or kind of decide how we're going to implement those in some of these other division work.
Once you figure out that piece, I know everyone wants to know how to do that.
yeah, it's yeah. We're in the same boat. If anybody has some really good plans of teaching on those,
yeah,
we'd be glad to know.
Do you have time for one or two questions, or do you have to go right now?
No, yeah, I can sure take a few questions. I feel bad that I have to leave, but.
Anybody have questions for Christine?
Christine?
Yes.
This is Carolyn Bidwell from Colorado. And I'm a little bit questioning how to handle, we're not region, we are county run, and so we're breaking it out by county as well as by, we've created these artificial type regions that everyone, a certain group of people is working with each region. And I'm just not sure what to do with these rolled up counties that are so tiny, you know, they're less than 50 cases and we have quite a few of those. And I just don't know quite how to tease out their data in a meaningful manner.
Right. We're having the same discussions here, and we have about 30 of those counties as well. Right now we're just representing them as in their rolled-up group, but we're the same kind of system. We have a county-administered system, and even the very smallest counties want to know their own performance.
Right. We're in the same boat.
Yeah, and so we're having the conversation here. We've had some, you know, consultation with the Children's Bureau folks. We just haven't really arrived at a solution to that yet.
And
we actually haven't had the time to do much with it because we get so focused on the statewide assessment piece.
Right. And, you know, I have to create those using our last quarter's data to, you know, rolling annual to go ahead and, you know, give that information out. And I'm loath to do that with these rolled up counties because truly the analysis doesn't work that way.
No.
And
no.
And you know, I'm not quite sure how to guide you know, my management to not misrepresent the data.
Right. Which is, you know, that's another reason that we haven't really gone to the counties with this yet, is we don't have a way of representing to, you know, 87 counties.
Right.
How they've done so.
Well, yeah, if you think of something, shoot me an email and I'll do the same.
Yeah, that'd be a great topic.
Yeah, because, I mean, as it is, I'm going to have to play with the syntax in order to get it broken out by county.
Right.
I put a note down, too, for the QI peer network that maybe that's a topic we can take up at some point in the next few months.
Yeah. And I have put that down as something that we can start working on as some possible TA around that. So
Linda,
we'll all put our heads together on this.
Linda?
Yes.
This is Hargrove.
Oh, good. We're glad you're on here, John.
Well, this is a question that's come up on more than one occasion for us. And this whole issue of the smaller counties. And one of the things we had discussed, sort of not really tangentially, but not in a great deal of detail, is just, and everybody's obviously on the same page with this in terms of the smaller counties and sort of the unstableness of such small numbers and being able to utilize those in the bigger picture with respect to the composites, but probably one thing that's possible in the very simplest sense, and this is no great finding, but one of the things that we had talked about was if you look at these smaller counties, on an on the individual measures, and over a course of time, it can actually provide some meaningful information, and it can give you a sense of how that particular county may be contributing to the individual composite, in the sense that if you've got a particular county, and this is obviously I'm making this up, but if you've got a particular county and you can create sort of a 3 or 4 year trend, even if they're serving 5 to 10 children on average over the course of that time, if you consistently see, you know, from period to period that, you know, only 30% of the kids are reunifying in less than 12 months, clearly I think that tells you something individually about that particular county. But I think in terms of being able to sort of in a methodological sense get it all folded into the composite, you really can't do that. But I think if you look at them on over a course of, you know, of time chronologically and try to identify trends at the individual measure level within the composite, it can be very useful information for that particular county and its staff.
Thanks, John. That's good. And, Linda, maybe you can follow up on that through the Resource Center. That's a good idea.
Yes.
Thank you, John.
Uh-huh.
This is Christine saying, I think that's actually all we really need is a measure level. But what we've been struggling with is how to even get there.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tough question, but I think that's why we're all sort of having the conversation, because
right.
It sort of exemplifies the difficulty. But I think the upshot is, and I think we all see it, is you can't really, from a methodological standpoint, just pinpoint its own contribution within the context of the whole composite. But clearly, if you're identifying it on the individual measure level and you're looking at it over time, it's, you know, you get a pretty good bet that this particular county is having a difficult time contributing positively to this composite.
Sure. And, John, this is Maria Duryea and Anna Cox from out in Oregon.
Yes, ma'am.
And we were just wondering, you know, in terms of accomplishing that at the small county level, wouldn't that be easy enough to do by just modifying the FIPS file in running your SPSS syntax?
Oh, yeah.
Can I?
What you can do, and I've done this myself, is that source file that you get from the Resource Center, it has the actual your county FIPS codes there, and you can actually, if you want to, the simplest way is to just switch the names of the fields if you wanted, but just make sure you keep track of that.
Right, and then, but that's only for the county level reporting.
Right.
To run the statewide, you have to do it separately.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The thing you would obviously want to focus on is on that computational spreadsheet. You at that juncture, provided you do that, you'd really want to, you know, avoid looking, considering the composite score at that point, because it's, you know, it's going to be off a bit. But you certainly can look at those individual measures as they lay out across, particularly the SPSS file that gets created, that gets dumped into the Excel spreadsheet. But you're absolutely right. I mean, we've done that in-house ourselves.
Peter, this is Christine. I need to leave you.
Yeah.
Leave the call. I hate listening to New Mexico, so I know that's kind of life after the review.
Yep.
But
Christine, thank you very, very much. I know you're in the midst of a bunch of statewide assessment stuff, and I'll just speak for everybody. We really appreciate you taking the time to share this with us. It's been really helpful.
Well, I was happy to do it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Christine, yes, thank you. And just remember that this will be recorded, so you can pull it off of OI's website and hear
great.
It.
Great.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
And anybody else out there who has any specific questions or want to get in touch with Christine, if you don't have her contact info, just get in touch with Linda or I, and we'll get it to you. What we were going to do now is Linda was going to give a quick overview of some data. We were going to start with this, but we wanted to have Christine just spend as much time as she could. So Linda Arnold is going to give a quick overview of some data profile issues, and then we're going to talk with Mary Ellen about what's been happening in New Mexico around these same types of issues.
Yes, and thank you, Peter. And I am really not going to take very long, because I think this conversation with states is so valuable. But a couple of things. Now, are you all hearing an echo when I'm talking?
No.
Nope.
Okay. It's just on this phone then. But just a couple of things, and we did send out one of the sample data profiles for you all to have. I want to talk, and on the data profile, I'm really going to page 7, the point-in-time permanency profile. But I want to talk just about a couple of things about the data profile. And one, I think Christine pointed this out so beautifully. The data profile is one part of the data that you're going to want to use. That, and it is, of course, very important. It is your AFGARS and NCANS data. It's how the Children's Bureau is looking at your data. But you have a lot of other data that, as a state, that you're going to be wanting to use and comparing with your data profile, I think. And so I think one of the first things that we recommend always is when you get your data profile to sit down with the people in your state, the data people, the systems people, the program people, the field staff, your QA people, to really look at the data profile and see, does it match, does what it is showing match what we think our system looks like? And I think that is just the recommendation. It's just so important. It's important because you all have your own coding that then gets mapped to AFGARS. And just for example, talk a little bit about placement types. All of you have maybe different placement types, and but then they all get mapped to the placement types that are there in AFGARS. So it's just really important when you're looking at the data that everybody is on at the same place with knowing what the data in the data profile say. So that's the first thing. The other thing, some of the things that I think have been found in these first states real quickly, and, of course, the foster care population flow, that can give you trends, but you need to look at, is that comparing with what your trends are? And Christine talked a lot about it, and analyzing it, taking it further to the looking at age, race, gender maybe, geography, doing more data analysis. The data profile gives you a very high-level look, looks at the quantity and level, and you've got to take it somewhat to the quality level with your QA data and also into data data analysis that's telling you why it looks this way. Some of the other areas that I think we're finding are permanency goals for children in care. There does seem to be some of the first states, there seem to be issues around accurate and timely permanency goals, and many of you may have reports where you're looking at this, but this is an area, it's another area where you can get judges involved because of their role with permanency goals, but I know that states have, there have been some real issues around other planned permanency arrangements and actually, you know, timeliness of permanency goals. TPR dates, again, those are so important, and they have so much to do with so many of the different measures and looking at are they in recorded in your foster care database as well as your adoption database. So many times it seems they're in the adoption database but not in the foster care database, which is where the data from the data profile is pulled. So, again, and then you, if you have issues or you have TPRs for both parents if you need to, if there are delays, where are they and why are they occurring? So, anyway, the county-level data we've already talked about a lot. Just to say that we have some tools to help you at the end of this. If we have time, we'll Julie Ohms here with me, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So, also, just the importance of you being able to run the data when you need it on the time frames, whether you want to run it monthly or quarterly, having that data to the county level, some of those issues we've already talked about. So we are working hard to put some tools out there and to provide technical assistance in these areas. So I think, Peter, with that, I know that everybody's really interested in the other state presentation, and so unless there's real specific questions, we can move on to Mary Ellen.
Thanks, Linda. Anybody have any questions about the issues that Linda raised? All right, well, some might come up, too, as we go through talking with Mary Ellen. Linda,
right.
Pick it up again at the end if other things occur to you that you want to highlight based on what we've talked about.
Right.
Okay.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome. Well, let's turn to Mary Ellen Biarzi from New Mexico, and she'll go through, let you all know where New Mexico is in all this and how they've been using their different data and information in the CFSR process and just generally. So thanks for being with us, Mary Ellen.
Oh, no problem. Again, my name is Mary Ellen Biarzi, and I'm the Deputy Director in Protective Services of the Children, Youth, and Families Department here in New Mexico. And one of my roles or one of my responsibilities is the coordination of the state's effort for the Child and Family Services Review. I got to say, I really appreciated Christine's comment about life after the review because you know, to echo so much of what she said is the intense amount of work that it takes for the state to prepare and participate in this process can't be underscored. Just really quick, kind of just a little information about New Mexico. It's, you know, geographically we are a very large state. However, population-wise, we're relatively small. There's only a little bit over 2 million people in our state, with the majority of those folks, a little over 500,000 in our largest urban area. We conduct probably about 1,600 investigations last calendar year. We have approximately 2,300 children in custody. Neglect accounts for the majority of our substantiations in our cases at about 70%. We have a Tier 1 SACWIS system. You may hear me refer to it as FACS. I'll try to not use too much lingo as I go through this. We began our process of our state self-assessment back in November of last year. In the course of this, and I think, you know, Linda talked about this a little bit when she was saying when you get your state data profile, spend time with your program people and your data people to review it, go over it, make sure it's making sense to y'all. Because one of the things that it did highlight for us was the need to go back in, you know, kind of fill in, you know, and correct missing data, look at some of our mapping processes, so that we got a state data profile that was as accurate as possible. And I would actually encourage, I mean, that's something that it was pretty labor-intensive, but I do think it was well worth the effort on our part to, again, get a state data profile that really provides accurate information to the state. We also had the same experience that Christine talked about in the sense of early on in the process using the information that was available to us and our state self-assessment team to early on identify our two other sites. And some of this really was driven by using the data. You know, Linda also talked about that, you know, the state data profile is just but one source of data. And I would want to underscore that. You know, we in New Mexico, somewhere in Minnesota, have a number of management information reports that are generated out of our system looking at, you know, everything from pending investigations and tardy case management, you know, looking at permanency plan types, you know, in again, investigation, substantiation rates, et cetera, et cetera. That you know, provided a significant piece of information for us. We also have some internal review teams that are specific to certain permanency plans, would use data and information generated from those teams. We also have a quality assurance system that mirrors the federal federal process. We use them also to feed information as far as like looking and kind of digging down into the county performance levels. We would use that information to compare with the state data profile. We also, within our quality assurance unit, would task them with doing kind of specialized reviews and reports that information fed into the state self-assessment. We were also fortunate in that we used information from our citizen review board process. They actually collect information, and so we use that information to feed into, again, looking at what we were seeing happening across the state. Currently, we're working with our court system on their data grant and the court improvement project. They became another source of data and information for us. And as I said before, it was like almost finally the last piece that we really kind of overlapped and looked at was the state DOTA profile. One of the things that was, in some ways, made the other sources of data extremely important in this process for us was that New Mexico was pretty significantly impacted by some of the changes in how the national standards and the composite measures were calculated, especially looking at, you know, what we've come to refer to as the eight-day rule as far as including kids in various counts, specifically the placement stability and some of the reunification numbers. So it really, the ongoing measures that we had really provided an opportunity for us to look at changes in performance and looking at changes in some of our standards or how we were meeting some of the standards that were really based upon, you know, performance issues and practice issues versus how many were due to changes in how things were being calculated. And so that was really important for us. In working with our state self-assessment team, and again, this is something, we obviously brought together a group of people representing, not only internal agency folks, but the court system. We had a pretty strong representation from the advocacy groups, providers, foster parents, and youth. We actually spent some time in the beginning of the state self-assessment team is really working with them on understanding and getting comfortable working with data. And so we actually had the National Resource Center come out and do a presentation. We were really fortunate to have here in New Mexico a statistician who could actually work with the team and, again, to help them understand data. And so we had a lot of conversations with the state self-assessment team about really understanding what was being measured, what did it say to you, and how to use the data to kind of test out theories or hypotheses. In other words, part of it, what I think it helped us do is kind of start honing in, and I think Christine talked about this also, is really kind of using this as, you know, laying that foundation for a program improvement plan. We had our on-site assessment the week of May 7th, and it was like one of those I kind of equated to, you know, like either like scheduling a wedding or a big party. I mean, it's like all this work goes into it, and all of a sudden it's at the end of the week, and it was done. We are anxiously anticipating our final report, although we have some preliminary numbers. I talked with our federal partners when they came out at the end of the week, and I said one of the things that was probably most reassuring about the whole process is there really wasn't a surprise by the time that we saw our on-site numbers. They were fairly predictable as far as what we were seeing. We have used the preliminary numbers, although that as we go out and we meet back with our community partners, you know, and are very clear about talking with them that these are preliminary findings at this point, but we've already used them to engage our courts and are actively working with our court improvement projects because one of the areas that we will be focusing on is permanency one in particular. So that process has already begun, and I think what's really helped us to have those conversations and to be able to engage especially the court system has been to be able to provide them the data and to talk with them about how we're seeing the impact, you know, in our particular situation. We're looking at some issues regarding timeliness of adjudications and how we see that playing out across all the different permanency items. And so it's become a real tool for us. And I don't know, Peter, if you have any other suggestions or ideas, jump right in.
Well, Well, the only thing that I've heard you say before, Mary Ellen, which now that you talk, I understand even more what you mean, but you've talked about when you engage stakeholders in the statewide assessment or the PIP, which you're about to start, wanting them to be a critical group, meaning not always finding fault, but critiquing strategies and all. And it strikes me as you talk about this that piece of helping them to understand and use the data is a key part of that. And I don't think work on that enough.
Yeah, I was going to say one of the things that, you know, and again, this was kind of a lesson learned in the first round is, you know, everyone comes to the table with their own personal experience, you know, and it had become and shaped the reality of what people to believe to be true about the child welfare system. And, you know, and in some cases, in fact, the data did support that. If you looked at that, you know, you could sit there and say, yes, you know, that is what we see happening. However, what we found to be more and more true is that, you know, it was a case or a couple of cases that were coloring someone's perceptions. And we were, you know, we wanted to really utilize this whole process as a mechanism by which that we can come together and build consensus about what needed to be done because, you know, we were looking at impacting more than just the child welfare agency. You know, that we're looking at, you know, this kind of multi-system approach to program improvement as really going to be the mechanism by which, you know, we move forward here in New Mexico. So what we were able to do, and again, we set aside some specific time in working with the state stakeholder group, is really going through and understanding what the measure is and also working with folks about, you know, how to consider data and not just looking at one piece of data in isolation. And I'll tell you, one of the things that's pretty exciting now is when we meet with those folks or when we, you know, talk to our stakeholders, you know, we may, for example, be talking about, you know, timeliness of reunification. And to hear back from a stakeholder who says, well, yes, but what does your reentry rate look like? I mean, you know, we start getting that whole sense of like, yes, people are getting it. People are beginning to understand, you know, how all of these pieces of data need to fit together for us to truly, you know, kind of, you know, develop appropriate PIP strategies. What we're looking for in our state team, which will become our PIP process, is that this will be the team that, you know, prior to even reporting back, you know, on a quarterly basis to the federal government as far as our process, is that we will be running, you know, by results, you know, to this team. And some of it's going to be, you know, your more of your process measures. You know, did this, in fact, you know, particular training or policy get implemented, you know? But will also be the data measures because we are looking at this team as becoming this, you know, kind of critical force for us in saying, you know, is this strategy working? You know, what are we, you know, what do we anticipate the data to look like? And if it doesn't, you know, why, you know, to have a better understanding of why that might be the case.
That's great. Well, let's check in with everybody else. Who has some questions for Mary Ellen? I have a couple others I could ask, but... Anybody have questions about what's going on in New Mexico?
Peter, this is Tom Pomonas.
Hey, Tom.
How are you?
Good.
My question would be is, in New Mexico, what's the percent of your population that's Native American, approximately? And did any of those discussions about that those Native American kids come in to your possible site selections or how the numbers, how it's reflected in your outcome measures and on.
Do you need information on mental health, housing, support groups, employment, services for
someone
persons
put us
with
on
disabilities?
Hold.
That was my second question.
Or other
that was your second question? Okay. Well, in regards
dial
to your question about it.
Or visit www.
Wait, Mary Ellen, hold on just a second.
I'm trying to locate that line.
Okay, thank you, Patty.
I can't locate it, though, while others are talking. Let me...
Okay, so we'll all be quiet until you turn
it
off.
Do you know an elderly or incapacitated adult who you suspect is being
abused,
or exploited?
Turn it off.
To report suspected abuse, call your local Department of...
There you go.
Okay, well, we know it's someone who deals with elder abuse, so we can narrow down.
Yeah, we were just about to find out.
Okay, sorry, Mary Ellen.
No, that's okay. About a third of our population is Native American, and yes, it did come into it came into our site selection process. We were both when looking at the site selection process, in a lot of ways we mirrored, we did the same process that Minnesota had described, in the sense of, you know, and I have to admit, our very first step was looking at the size of the caseloads to see which of the counties could support the review, and that, you know, for us narrowed it down significantly. And then we looked at those remaining counties to look at the percentage of Native American children that were in care and how they were being served, whether or not there was a tribe or pueblo that was served by the county. We also have tribal state agreements with a number of the Native American populations here in New Mexico. You know, we considered that and did use that as one of the factors in making recommendations for our site selection. Two of our sites, actually served a number of Native American families. One, which was Albuquerque, our largest urban center, actually had a lot of doesn't have actually a tribe within the boundaries of the county, however, does serve a lot of Native Americans that, are the urban Native American population. Our other site, which was Santa Fe County, actually has a number, it's like two or three pueblos that are within the county and or annexed to the county, and again, serve those. So again, it was one of the significant factors that we looked at in doing the site selection. And unfortunately, all that information about the Adult Protective Services blanked in my head, and I forgot what else you asked.
I did, too, so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Peter, this is Liz in Texas again.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Mary Ellen. Could one of you, because you both approached that and because I just don't know in my brain enough, could one of you just revisit what the criteria is for a county having a sufficient population for not being aggregate or being considered as a sample site? I mean, as a site for consideration?
You know, I can tell you, New Mexico, one of the things that we did is, you know, we were looking at, first off, we broke down the 65 cases into the 40 foster care cases and then the remaining in-home services cases. So one of the things that we looked at is, you know, within the foster care population, they have the four different criteria, the four different case types. And we kind of used as a rule of thumb of, you know, did it have within the sampling period a sufficient amount to give us the sample and then basically four times the sample to look at a sufficient oversample. And then we just basically took that number and applied it, to the potential, number of cases within those sites to kind of start ballparking it in. Now, I'll tell you, even doing that process for Lee County, which was one of our smaller rural sites, we did run into a bit of an issue with our in-home services sample. We were fortunate that we had to work creatively with the Children's Bureau to make sure that we had a sufficient oversample. But it really did help us kind of ballpark into what was going to be, feasible to be able to do to pull a sufficient sample.
That's helpful. But what's the magic number? Are you saying there was like 50? You had to have at least 50, or you had to have at least 100? What's the sufficient oversample size?
Peter, can you or Linda talk to that? Because I'm not remembering off the top of my head. I mean, because this, we did this back in like January.
Yeah, I don't have the number either, although I think there is a sampling guidance document that's out that lays it all out there, I think.
I think that's right. Is John still on the phone with us?
I am, but I don't have an answer to that.
Okay.
I mean, again, I think, you know, we just ballparked it, you know, in the sense of, you know, if I was looking at, let's say, 10, I'm looking, for example, 10 cases of kids with plans of adoption, you know, and I'm thinking maybe about 4, you know, kind of per, you know, that would come up per site. I was looking for plans to make sure that my county had, you know, potentially 16 to 20 cases that might be applicable.
Liz, we will. I do believe there is some guidance on that, and we will get that, and I'll send that to you.
Linda?
Yes.
I believe, I think it's changed maybe slightly the second round, but I believe that in the 3 counties that there had to be sufficient numbers to have 150 in-home cases and 150 foster care cases. So that was the universe.
During the first round.
Yeah, and I think it's real close to that the second round.
Right, but there's some additional requirements because of the stratified cases. So
Linda, you'll send that to Liz?
Yes.
Want me to? Okay.
No, I will take that on.
Okay.
I'm sending her some other stuff, so I'll get that when I send that, Liz.
Hey, Linda.
All right, other questions for Mary Ellen? I had one, and I totally forget it now.
This is Terry Moore at Kansas University.
Yep.
And I just had a comment that I appreciated what Mary Ellen said about going across measures to kind of tell the story. And that's even more beneficial, I think, when you are looking at it by, you know, like your different geographic areas in the state and see what stories emerge from that. One of the items that we just worked with Kansas in doing their state assessment. And one of the other measures that we used that really helped put a lot of these measures in a context was a out-of-home placement rate per 1,000 children in the population. And so we were able to really see some connections between different areas of the state that had things like a low out-of-home placement rate, and we were seeing higher rates, that is, worse rates of reunification and those kinds of things. But I really like what she was saying about looking across measures and trying to see what the story is behind the series or across those measures, I think, was a really important point.
Thanks, Terry. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, this is a completely random thought, but it's related. We do these news clippings every week related to child welfare, and there's an article in one of the Chicago papers last week or the week before, and there was in this online article, they had a chart that broke out by all the zip codes in Chicago, the number of children placed, and then they converted it to rates, just like you're talking about, and then tried to analyze those. And this is within a newspaper article. I was pretty impressed that they had done this, and it really did, I think, bring home to people what different placement rates in different parts of the city look like. So that does seem like an effective way to help people compare and understand what it looks like in their community.
Another one of the things I was hearing that I was pleased about is the analysis of the range of independent variables that's available to people, whether it be age, gender, race, you know, county, how about judicial district, you know, all of those kinds of things. I think that can really inform where to focus your energies on some of your program improvement planning. One cautionary note, though, is in doing that when you're looking at things like the exit cohort measures, which can really kind of give you a distorted view of things. Just a recent example of that, we were seeing children with SED, the rates of adoption, you know, that population were just jumping all over the place. And when you really dig down into it, there just weren't very many kids with SED that were getting adopted, because those exit measures depends on achieving the outcome first, and then you're looking at the timeliness of that. So I think that's an important thing to begin to look at. We then noticed that around 2% of the kids that got adopted were SED, where there, you know, if you look at the entire population, about 25% of the kids were SED. So just a cautionary note about, you know, disaggregating those and analyzing those by these different categories. An important thing to do, but be careful.
Thanks a lot. Those are great comments. Other questions for Mary Ellen around New Mexico work? Mary Ellen, just to put you on the spot a little, I know you're just starting to think about the PIP, but have you thought at all, and I should know the answer to this, and I don't, but have you thought at all about, you know, when you start getting different existing and perhaps new work groups taking on different parts of the PIP, are you going to task them with thinking about the measurement aspect of that using these those various sources of data that you described, or are you going to try and centralize that a little? We haven't talked about that yet, and I'm just wondering what your thinking is. I know it's early, but...
No, actually, it's not early. You know, we actually, we believe that there are probably, you know, for some of the measures and some of the things that we're looking at, you could already identify what the measure is going to be. What we really are going to be looking at our work groups of doing is either to be tasked with identifying what some contributing measures might be, especially when there isn't like a measure that we can pull out of, our SACWA system, is looking at what might be a proxy measure and how could we access and how can we get to it. So that is actually anticipated as part of our discussion as we move towards developing and then finalizing our PIP.
And just so everybody knows, I think if I'm correct, Mary Ellen, that reflects at least in part the way that you went at a lot of your statewide assessment, correct?
Yeah.
The Children's Bureau they pulled together three examples from the first, I think, only five statewide assessments, and we've put them out. The CFSR-CFSP Coordinators Network, I think, has looked at these, but one of them is from New Mexico, and this is a point I was going to raise in terms of data. Mary Ellen talked about all the different sources of data, but that you can use, and you know, this focus on having our statewide assessments be more evaluative this round, it's really important to think about what data, both from the data profile and more specifically from your SACWA system and your QA data and other data, and then even stakeholder input during the statewide assessment. How do you put all that together during your statewide assessment to illustrate to yourselves and then the Children's Bureau for any given outcome or item where you are and how you're doing? And I think New Mexico did that really nicely in the statewide assessment, and that'll really set up that PIP process. But I think that's another piece of what we've all been talking about today, that it really helps to think of the range of data sources and obviously not just the data profile. Is that a fair way to put it, Mary Ellen, in terms of how you all did
that? That would be, and I think, you know, what the other benefit that we found to really kind of, you know, casting the net wide as far as, like, looking for data sources is that I really think it helped with obtaining buy-in from a number of our providers and from a number of our community partners is when, you know, we actually put forth a repeated call for, you know, bring us your data, you know, like help us complete the picture, help us map this out and really look at that. And so I think, you know, when other sources are able to bring in, you know, their data and information and becomes part of a larger picture, you know, I think, you know, what it created for us was this, you know, kind of like big picture ownership of the process and then specifically it not just being like a review of the child welfare agency.
Okay, well, anybody else have last questions or thoughts about all the things Mary Ellen has shared with us? Linda, Arnold, do you have other thoughts that you wanted to add in related to what you said before that have come up for you that you'd like to throw in here?
I don't think so, other than back to something that Mary Ellen said, and I generally always say when I start talking about the data profile if you can get your data profile as soon as possible. Here again, we talked a little bit about that. You've got your state data, but it's still the data profile is showing it the way it's coming to you and the way the feds are seeing it, and to deal with any data issues that you have up front so that you can have the most accurate data profile whenever you start the process. So I will just put a plug in for that, that if you think there are areas that you have concerns with, that certainly is an area that we've been helping some states with early on, because that just makes all the difference if you're starting out with as accurate a picture as possible. And I certainly agree with what Mary Ellen said, is just, and everybody, getting that broad picture and getting the buy-in. So just putting that plug in, that that is really, really important, and that everybody should be looking at their data from that perspective.
And one other thing I would add, just in terms of thinking across the states, I mean, both Minnesota and New Mexico have QA processes modeled on the federal, the Child and Family Service review process. So they have data that matches up almost identically with the federal approach. And a lot of states have done that in one way or another, but not all states have. And I want to make sure we say that when we're talking about QA data and qualitative data, there's a way to use, and Mary Ellen talked about a number of different sources beyond just the QA data. And, you know, there are states that have different forms of data, have been really successful both in program improvement plans and statewide assessments in the past at almost crosswalking that data to the different CFSR items, and then using the data that you have in your statewide assessment and in your PIPs, too, to measure, to both create baselines in your PIPs that's based on your own data, and then targets for improvement. And the federal folks are open to doing that as long as you just kind of let them know how you're doing the analysis, what the sources of data are. So I just didn't want to lose that, because there's no requirement that all states have a CFSR process that's identical. So I think that's important to think about. And there are states out there that have used existing foster care review or administrative review processes and adapted them to pull in information that's a little bit closer. They have used a variety of different peer case review or case review processes, supervisory review processes. Mary Ellen mentioned citizens review panels. There's a lot of different ways that you can get a look at the practice in these different areas that the CFSR will look at when it comes out to your state, or that you're going to be trying to make changes in during your program improvement plan. So I would just urge you to think about those as you start getting involved in this process and beforehand. Mary Ellen, any last thoughts or other things you wanted to share that we haven't covered?
I just wish the best of luck to all the other states in the process.
And now you're really glad you're where you're at in it, right?
Yes, definitely.
Right. So a large part of it is behind you. So thanks for sharing, Mary Ellen. It's so great to have these states that are going through this first be willing to share with everybody, because it makes for such rich discussion, and I know that all of the states appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. And even though Christine's not here, thanks. We all owe Christine thanks as well. You know, I was going to wrap it up and make a bunch of points, but really, to me, they've been made already. All the key things have been made. The only other thing I would throw in here, it goes a little bit beyond the CFSR, but that's what our title is, of course, is the CFSR and beyond. Just an observation, and that is that as more and more states have started using data and information, I've started to notice states are beginning to think that, okay, I've got a good QA system set up. I'm starting to use my data. But they're looking for ways to make sure that people at more of a local level start looking at and using the data. And some states have set up either CQI or QI committees. Some have done it more or less formally. But I think that's just something worth thinking about in terms of using data and information, and that is, where are the forums where people throughout the organization can start to look at it and use it? And I think the CFSR offers an opportunity to do that, but you can do it outside of that process as well. And so I just thought I'd throw that in there to start thinking about what's the next step in terms of actually taking all this great stuff and making it usable on a more frequent basis than maybe it has been in the past. Any last questions or thoughts from people? All right, then. Just wanted to let you all know that we have two more teleconferences in our spring series. There's one on June 14th on engaging youth in the CFSR. and PIP process, and then there's one on June 26 on engaging the courts and building a court-agency collaboration. So please feel free to join us for those. We've had really great participation this year, and these conversations, I think, are incredibly helpful, more than just the presentations from folks. You should already have an email waiting for you when you go back to your email system with a link so you can give us an evaluation of the teleconference, and we really look at those closely, and they're really helpful to us in trying to make these more targeted to what you all need out there in states and agencies and universities and all the other places where people are calling from. So thank you very, very much for participating, everybody. Thanks again to Mary Ellen and Christine and Linda Arnold, and let us know if you have any questions or if there's anything else any of us can help with. So thanks.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.